as we roll into the afternoon on a sunny Thursday across Saskatchewan. Thanks for being with us here on the Evan Bray Show. Here till another half hour. Brent Lauk's filling in for Evan. I'm here tomorrow as well. Evan's back behind the microphone coming up on Monday. Typical summer day across Saskatchewan, hitting around 30 degrees this afternoon in the sunshine for Saskatoon and area. Regina even hotter, up around 34, 35 this afternoon. And with the heat, you know how it works in the prairies in July. You get a hot day and we could get some thunderstorm activity developing in different areas through late afternoon and evening. Keep your eye on the sky. Okay, so we're going to be talking about some geological information for you here right now. I'm joined by my next guest, Jonathan O'Neill. Jonathan is an associate professor with the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences at the University of Ottawa, and we are talking about what may be the oldest rocks known on Earth here in Canada. Jonathan O'Neill, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I was pretty proud of myself, Jonathan, except my brain's locked up right now. I was trying my best to nail the pronunciation of this Greenbelt area, Nuvwagadik?
Yeah, I would say Nuvwagadik. Of course, it's an Inuktitut name, so my pronunciation is probably not okay either. So,
so where is this in Canada that we find what you think may be the oldest rocks in the world?
So this is in Nunavik. It's in the Inuit part of northern Quebec, actually, just on the shore of Hudson Bay.
And what kind of rocks are we talking about here?
So the belt itself, we call it a belt, so it's a very small area that is about 10 square kilometers, and we believe they're the oldest rocks on Earth, and it would actually be volcanic rocks formed at the bottom of an ocean back then 4.3 billion years ago.
And are these rocks, like, right there on the surface?
That's correct. They're right there at the surface. They were formed at the surface, but then because of the tectonics and because the Earth is very good at moving its crust and time is also not an issue, we have, you know, millions and billions of years for things to move up and down. The rocks were probably buried in the crust at about 20, 25 kilometers, and they were cooked for a while. We call it metamorphism, and they were brought up at the surface, and we can actually walk on them today.
How are you able to determine their age? How can you tell me that these might potentially be over 4 billion years old?
So every time we want to date anything, minerals, rocks, or things like this, we use radioactivity. Mm-hmm. We can actually isolate some elements in the rock that are radioactive, so that means they're decaying into another element, and we know the speed of that decay or the transformation, and we use this as a timer, exactly like an hourglass-shaped timer, where you have sand or grains of sand at the top of the reservoir that are flowing at the bottom, so one element at the top transforming into another element at the bottom, and we know the speed of the flow of your hourglass-shaped timer, and then we can use the same principle or a similar principle using radioactive element to date rocks or minerals or some other geological material.
Jonathan O'Neill, Associate Professor, Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences at the University of Ottawa. And we're talking about this particular rock formation on the east shore of the Hudson Bay that they potentially believe may be the oldest rocks that we, I guess, have access to here on planet Earth. Any other rocks in the world you're aware of that come close to this age?
Well, as you may know, the age of this rock was actually debated for the last 15 years, 4.3 billion years old. The rocks we actually just dated to confirm this are slightly younger. They're 4.16 billion years old, but they're basically confirming the old age of the area. But beside these rocks, we're staying in Canada, they would be 4 billion years old in the Northwest Territory. And if we stay again in Canada, in Labrador, there are some rocks that are just shy of 3.9 billion years old.
Any researchers trying to counter your information? Do most of the people in your field that have read your research buy into these being the oldest?
Well, we'll see. Hopefully that's the case. Like when we suggested these old age in 2008, there was a lot of scientific debate that was triggered by this. You know, scientists, we like to argue about things like this just to get at the right answer. But hopefully now we're providing new information about these rocks and this area. And hopefully it's going to be a good argument to convince a good portion of the scientific community interested in old rocks.
You were talking about how these rocks potentially formed then 4 billion years ago. What would that area of our country really have looked like if we're able to imagine that 4 billion years ago?
Well, for a long time, we thought that rocks, more than 4 billion years ago, we actually had no rocks. The name of the geological eon is called Hadean, basically named after Hades, the Greek god of the underworld and hell. So we thought that the Earth was a big ball of molten lava, if you want. But for the last 20, 25 years, we know that the Earth was very different from this, different from what it is today. But very early on, we had a crust and probably a shallow ocean. So water was present at the surface, an atmosphere very different than the one we have today. But imagine that the crust of the Earth is covered by oceanic crust in a shallow ocean, if you want.
Mm-hmm. How deep would those rocks go? You say they're on the surface right now, but do they extend down quite a ways into the Earth?
Well, these old rocks, we don't know. We would have to probe down, and that's a difficult thing to do. We know that the crust for that part of the Canadian Shield is actually pretty thick, but it's probably different packages of rocks and not necessarily a whole chunk of very, very old rocks. But exactly how deep that small fragment of very, very old crust is, it's very hard to know if we don't probe. But that's a bit difficult to do.
Interesting work that you're doing. It must be a fascinating journey for you to be on. This is your life mission, to study more about our Earth's geology?
Well, that's right. My main scientific interest is to understand how our planet formed, but also how it evolved very, very early on. So I see it as I'm trying to understand how the childhood of our planet was, and maybe the teenage years, and then the big challenge is we don't have a lot of records. We don't have a lot of rocks to tell us this story. So that's why we're kind of hunting for the old rocks. It's not just to have the oldest rocks, but it's basically because these are like books for us, and we can read the history of our young planet at that time. So that's the ultimate goal.
Oh, that's well said. I appreciate the information. It's always exciting to hear about some of this research that's going on in our world and especially in our country. Jonathan O'Neill, thanks so much for your time.
Well, thanks for having me. Have a good one.
You bet. Jonathan O'Neill, Associate Professor, Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences at the University of Ottawa, and the research they've been doing, as he said, a number of years ago, it was identified, this rock formation on the east side of Hudson Bay in Quebec, as potentially being well over 4 billion years old. There was some question as to whether or not that was the case, but he says more and more their research is proving that it is indeed perhaps some of the oldest rocks in the entire world at 4.16 billion. It's 15 after 12. Brent Lauk's filling in. Little bit to go yet. You're listening to the Evan Bray Show on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Quite a variety of topics on the Evan Bray Show today. Thanks for joining along. Brent Lauks filling in for Evan this week. I'm here again tomorrow, and Evan will be back next week as well. But we want to thank Dwight Newman, who we had on kicking off the program, talking about this decision on the part of Saskatchewan and Alberta to challenge Ottawa on the Federal Impact Assessment Act. Also, we were talking with Mark Milkey from the Aristotle Foundation about a survey and report they have done showing what they believe to be is a growing number of people in Saskatchewan and Alberta who like the idea of going down the road of separation. Who else did we have on the show here? Too many to mention. Oh, well, Matt Britton certainly got the phones going, more so than any other guest. Matt, Senior Director of Vehicle Programs with SGI. As we were talking about the province and the vehicle inspection rules as they apply when you buy a used vehicle outside the province and you bring it here. A lot of great texts on it, a lot of great experiences and stories that people were sharing with us about getting their vehicles inspected or not. We had Sean Jakes from the Water Security Agency, just an advisory for people in the heat of summer and low water levels to be watching for blue-green algae in the water that can cause health problems for humans and animals as well. Oh boy, we were off to the RCMP Heritage Center in Regina. We had the CEO on there talking about all the things that they have to offer. If you want to check it out, as one of Regina's top five tourist attractions. And the list goes on and on and on. But before I go here today, I want to share this story about love and lottery, or maybe the lost love and lottery. Story out of Winnipeg. So January of last year, January 2024, a young woman was celebrating her birthday. Crystal McKay was the name of this lady. And she says her boyfriend at the time, Lawrence Campbell, bought a Lotto 649 ticket and gave it to her as a birthday present. That ticket went on to be a $5 million winner. And what makes this story a little questionable in my mind as far as the boyfriend, they're no longer boyfriend, girlfriend. In fact, he went with her to the Western Canada Lottery office in late January of 2024 to claim the prize money. And there he signed multiple documents, including one in which the girlfriend claimed to be the lawful holder of the ticket. So he signed off on it. The plaintiff, as he is now, because he's taking her to court, the plaintiff was present with her. He did not dispute this or suggest otherwise, according to her lawyer. There was a release of claim signed, which acknowledged he did not have any claim to or any interest in the ticket. His lawsuit claims the pair were in a loyal romantic partnership, and he accused the young woman of cutting off contact with him shortly after the funds were deposited in her bank account. He claims that she ghosted him. $5 million will do that, won't it? But at the end of the day, this fellow says that he bought the ticket for himself. He simply asked her to hold it because he had lost his wallet. I don't think this guy's got a hope. But you can't blame a guy for trying. $5 million, yeah, sure, hire a lawyer, see how it works. The Lottery Corporation had put out a release the end of January of 24 announcing that she was the winner of the $5 million prize. And it said in the release that her partner at the time had given her the winning ticket as a birthday gift. Maybe he's hoping for an out-of-court settlement. Yes, love and lottery. Always some problem is going to come along. You got to figure in a situation like that. And you've heard different stories over the years. In the many years that we've had lotteries, sometimes they mess with relationships big time. Brent Laux with you for just a few more minutes here. Coming up tomorrow, of course, Friday, got an interesting show for you, as we always do. I want to thank Libby, who is our producer here on the Evan Bray Show, for lining up so many of the guests that we do. What else are we going to talk about? Oh, yeah, the Blue Jays. I got to get home and watch that Blue Jays game, because they are just looking like they are unbeatable these days after yet another win yesterday over the New York Yankees. Nothing better than a Blue Jays win. Even better when it's over the New York Yankees. And they've won three of the four game series. I don't know if we would have expected that. You look back a month ago, how things were shaping up. The Yankees had a strong start. They were on top of the American League East, and the Jays, I think at the time, were something like 15 games back. But now they're tied atop of the American League East division. Jay is just an amazing come-from-behind win. Well, close to being behind yesterday. I guess they were tied up, but Jay's got the win again yesterday. So we have another game then this afternoon, New York Yankees, the fourth game in this series in Toronto. We wish the Jays all the best in that game as well. This weekend, if you happen to be down in Toronto, it's going to be the California Angels that'll be in town for a three-game series. I'm going to be down there. Yeah, we're flying down to Toronto on Saturday. I'm going to check out the Sunday game. And then Evan, I believe, is going to be back in the chair here coming up on Monday. Also want to thank some of the people that called in and texted in today on this car inspection story. We were just talking to Davis, our producer here, on the other side of the screen as far as phone calls and texts. And in my time of being the guest host here, I don't think I've seen so many texts as we had come in on this whole issue. And, of course, it all got started with the Saskatchewan NDP calling on the government to get rid of the mandatory inspections for used vehicles purchased outside the province, saying it was outdated and expensive and an unnecessary obstacle to interprovincial trade. I think in a perfect world, if all of the provinces had basically the same type of inspection, and under this new world that we're living in, where supposedly we're going to free up all of this interprovincial trade stuff and we're going to remove all these barriers, then in a perfect world, it would make sense. Well, sure, why don't all the provinces do it the same way. But, you know, in this country, that isn't the way it works. Provinces have their own way of doing things. And even as our guest, Matt Britton from SGI was talking about, in Saskatchewan, the rule is you bring a car in here, whether you're buying it from out of province or you're moving into Saskatchewan from out of province. If you're going to register it, you got to get this vehicle inspection done. He was saying in some provinces, it's even more intense in that every year or every so often, at least a lot of provinces, if you have a vehicle registered in that province, not the fact that you brought it in, but you're just driving your vehicle, you go to register it, then you got to get a regular inspection done. And I think there's something to be said for that. Why not consider that? I think the most common complaint we had in our text this morning on this topic was more about the fact the provincial sales tax paid every time that used vehicle gets sold. That's something a lot of people say isn't right and we should change. Thanks for listening along. Brent Laux, I'll be back with you one more time tomorrow morning at 8:30 on the Evan Bray Show on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.